We've been in the series called The Parables of the Kingdom. And so what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks is the reality of the kingdom of heaven, which is God's rule and reign. And we have been asking the question, what is the kingdom of heaven like? We know that Jesus was concerned about this question himself, so he told lots of stories about it, stories that I think if you've been around in church for a while, you've heard called parables. So he tells us parables about what the kingdom of heaven is like, and today we're going to look at a parable describing what the people of the kingdom of heaven are like. A parable describing what the people of the kingdom of heaven are like, and we're going to use one word to describe them, and that one word is going to be our text for this morning. All right, so before we begin, though, I want to ask you a question. If you had to describe someone from Chicago with one word, what or phrase, you can use a phrase, what word or phrase would it be? If you had to describe a person from Chicago with one word or phrase, what word or phrase would it be? And I remind you that we are in church, so be kind. All right, so like, just take a moment, think about that for a moment, and then turn to your neighbor. If you came with someone that you know, you can turn to them. If someone is sitting next to you that seems friendly enough, you can turn to them as well. Just a moment, one word or phrase to describe a person from Chicago. Charles, you have a good one. All right, so actually we asked this question on the socials, and here's what we turned up. Although I'm curious, if you got a real ringer, would you raise your hand and stand up and tell it to us? But you don't have to stand up. You could just tell it to us. We're all friends here, right? Charles, you have a good one? Yes? Matt Dobschutz. Is Matt Dobschutz here? He's a person. So a persona that describes Chicago would be a man named Matt Dobschutz. By the way, if you don't know Matt Dobschutz, just think of Chicago, picture someone, and you'll probably hit the mark. He's not here, I don't think, right now. Okay, anyone else? Anyone else? Well, okay. The word that most commonly came up in the socials was this word, resilient. Resilient. Many of you are going, yes. That's right. I mean, it depends on what season we ask this question, right? If you said summer, it'd be different. If you said winter, then you would say probably resilient, which is where we're coming from anyway. So this relates to what we're talking about today, because I want to ask the question, what word might Jesus use to describe the people of his kingdom? Okay, so now we're not talking about Chicago, but we're talking about the people of his kingdom. Anyone know what one word might Jesus use to describe the people of his kingdom? Anyone?
Sheep.
Sheep, yep, he would use sheep. That's right. He does call us sheep. What about a characteristic? I mean, I guess you could call being sheep-like characteristic, sheepy, sheepish. You know, we are sheepy, sheepish people or whatever. Yeah, what one word what you might use to describe? Well, let me jog your memory. For those of you who've been in church for a while, the Apostle John tells us this in chapter 13, a new command I give you, love one another, right? As I have loved you, so you must, everyone, love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you, everyone, say it with me, love one another. But as you know, love is quite expansive. It can mean a lot of things, right? It can mean warm affection. I love my pet. Or delight. I love sunsets or ice cream or any number or manner of things, right? So Jesus knows this, of course, so he's kind to give us some articulation around that love, and he does so in the parable that we're looking today. So when it comes to followers of Jesus, here's how Jesus would articulate love. One word, forgiveness. So honest confession, I didn't really want to talk about this today. I am going to preach a message that is preached to me, essentially, because I have a hard time with forgiveness. I can have a hard time forgiving even the littlest of things. I still have a hard time forgiving the seller of our old home in Syracuse. I've even thinking about this incident, about this woman who parked in our apartment parking spot in California, and parking spots were in short supply, and they kind of ruined our evening, and I just had a really hard time forgiving that person. Or the person who cut me off at the stop sign went before their turn at the four-way stop in Chicago. That's one phrase, by the way, to describe Chicago, going before your turn at a four-way stop. Anyway, I just thought, oh my goodness, I have a hard time forgiving that person, and I stared at them. And anyway, I was riding home on my scooter, my electric scooter. Those of you who see me do it know that it's comedy in its highest form. I'm riding around on my scooter. I'll have you know that it goes 20 miles an hour, so it does feel like I'm flying sometimes. But anyway, I'm watching like these cars that are like, there's one car, it's on a one-way street, and there's no way for this other car to get around. And this one car is just going down the street, and this other car is right behind it. And the car in front is going so slow. And the car behind is just honking and honking and honking and honking. And it only happens for a couple blocks. And I'm on my scooter, and I'm watching this unfold. And I have to slow down because I'm going so fast, you know. So I just want to watch. And at one point, the front car turns over to the side, and the other car, the back car, like comes up right next to it. And they get out, and they start yelling at each other. I mean, I was like, oh, my goodness. What could actually happen here? So forgiveness. Forgiveness. It would feel like almost impossibly glib to just go up to them and say, hey, ought you not to forgive one another? And so I just want you to know that we're going to talk about forgiveness today. I didn't want to talk about it today for lots of reasons, which I'll mention as we go. But I feel compelled to talk about it because Jesus talks about it. Jesus says that, man, when it comes to love and what love actually looks like, man, it looks like forgiveness. And I also wouldn't talk about this unless I knew without a shadow of a doubt that at the heart of human flourishing is gracious generosity in the form of forgiveness. Like as Bishop Desmond Tutu tells us, there is no future without forgiveness. In other words, we're stuck in the past without forgiveness, unable to live out the hopeful future God intends for us if we do not forgive. The future in forgiveness is where the Spirit of God dwells, and there's freedom there. So we have to talk about it. That's why I love like sort of preaching through the scriptures, because when you preach topics, you can just be like, maybe this is a topic we don't want to do this week, you know? But when you preach through the scriptures, you actually have to tackle the things that Jesus says and the time that Jesus says them as we look through these series. Okay, anyway, so here we go. We're going to look at Matthew 18 together. Matthew 18. It'll be up on the screens. Here, then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? And he's thinking, I'm going to get some major brownie points here. Up to seven times? The perfect number, seven. Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. Not seven times, but 77 times. So right at the beginning, we're at the heart of it. Forgiveness in the kingdom of heaven flows like a never-ending stream. I mean, with all that time that Peter is spending with Jesus, he's probably thinking, I'm getting kind of a clue that things like work differently under the kingship of Jesus. Maybe mercy and grace are the new law rather than vengeance. And so he's thinking, man, I'm going to get some brownie points because he just after all called me Satan, you know, and so maybe I should just get some brownie points here. So you know, like, or he will call me Satan, or I can't remember exactly when that occurs. You'll have to ask someone who knows the Bible a little bit better than I do. But anyway, he's getting this idea that maybe things work a little bit differently. So he says seven, and he's thinking, okay, Jesus is going to pat him on the back and say, you got it. But Jesus doesn't do that. He says, no, 77 times. In other words, in my kingdom, forgiveness is without limit. But he's also saying something else, right? 77 appears in Genesis 4:24. Is Cain, if Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech 77 times. So basically what Jesus is saying is, Jesus is saying, if you know your Bible, you know that what I'm saying is, in my kingdom is where vengeance ends. Forgiveness without limit. Vengeance ends. And so to illustrate that kind of forgiveness, Jesus tells us a parable. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to repay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him. This might be the most important phrase in this whole parable. Took pity on him. Cancel the debt, let him go. So by the way, 10,000 bags of so 10,000 bags of gold, 10,000, I think, was the highest numeral in Greek at that time. So, I mean, we're talking an astronomical sum in a bag of gold, equivalent to a talent, which is about what one person can make in about half of their lifetime. So we're talking an astronomical sum of money. And so then when you look at the servant saying, I will pay back everything, you have to wonder, was he just saying anything that he could to get out of trouble? So anyway, as if you know this story, you know that it keeps going on. It's, you know, it doesn't end with this tidy little, okay, so you've been forgiven much, you know, so you forgive. No, it goes on and says, but when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins, which is a lot of money, but it's not as much money. It's like about a year's wages. It's not as much money as the 10,000 bags of gold. And if you know this story, you know that something unthinkable happens. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay it back. But he refused. Instead, he went off, had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in, you wicked servant. I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother and sister from your heart. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each one of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart. And so this parable has one thing to teach us, with a couple points around it, but that one thing is, as we have been forgiven, so we must forgive. In fact, forgiveness is such a sign of the people of the kingdom of heaven that if you do not forgive as freely as you have been forgiven, you do not bear the mark of the kingdom. You're almost like you're not even belonging to it. In fact, that's what I think he's saying. And so, forgiveness. We need to talk about forgiveness today. And by the way, it's interesting, this parable. I mean, we'll talk about it in three different ways. The first way we'll talk about it is we'll talk about how generous the King of Love is to us through his extravagant forgiveness. In other words, anything that he asks us to do, he hasn't done himself. Have you noticed that, by the way? Everything that Jesus calls us to do, Jesus himself did. He demonstrates his love through extravagant forgiveness. The second thing that we want to talk about is we want to talk about how the King of Love actually exposes us. And the third thing is we want to talk about how the King of Love shows us and enables us how to forgive, all right? So the first thing, the King of Love demonstrates love through extravagant forgiveness. So 10,000 bags of gold, we talked about, largest numeral for which a Greek term existed at the time. Bag of gold is the largest known amount of money. One talent is what one servant or slave would be able to make in a half of their lifetimes. This is unrepayable, essentially. And it's so much so big that a lot of scholars have wondered, well, how did the slave get this much money in the first place? Well, they got it. Probably got it because he was an official. He managed the money of the king. And so this makes it doubly worse. It's not his money, it's the king's money. And so to forgive or cancel the debt means that it must have been enormously costly to the king. So costly and so much money that it probably even would hamper his rule. It's going to hurt, really hurt. And so the clearest analog to the king of love forgiving this debt, and in this case is the king of love forgiving our debt, right? We inevitably must come to the recognition of the unspeakably precious generosity in forgiveness and in love of God for you and me. I mean, what Jesus wants us to do at the beginning of this parable is he wants to communicate to us that no matter how far we've fallen, no matter what we've done, no matter how much debt we've racked up, we too can have compassion and forgiveness. We who have rejected the King of Love, who actually crucified him with our sin, we are being forgiven of all of that sin, not just in our past or in our present, but for everything we will do. As Hebrew tells us, for why one sacrifice, he's made perfect forever those who are being made holy. The debt has been canceled. We are set free from the burden of our rebellion and sin. We're let go. It's like the door to our debtor's prison has been opened and we can go free. You know, if you've been a Christian for a long time, I've been a Christian for a very, very long time, since I was in, I think, sixth or seventh grade. That was a long time ago for me. I've been a Christian for a long time. And, you know, like one thing that's happened to me as I've been a Christian for this long time is I've become a different person. Like under the influence of the Holy Spirit in my life, I've changed. Many of you can say the same thing. Many of you have been here maybe for a little bit and you're like, I think I'm a different person now than I was before I became a Christian. That's what the Spirit of God does. He works in us. He changes us, right? And we're here. We're faithful. We're here week after week. We give sacrificially. We treat our neighbors well for the most part, or at least from our perspective. And the funny thing that happens I know that happens with me and maybe it happens with you, but the longer I'm a Christian, the more I become convinced, if I'm not careful, that all this righteousness came from me. That I, under any other circumstance, would be just as good. I just got a little older or a little more experience, made some mistakes, you know, learn from those mistakes. But man, we will never be so far along in our transformation that we won't need this good news. We are forgiven. We are forgiven. I think that one of the reasons why we might have a hard time forgiving is that we become so, maybe so far along in our faith, so enlightened that we've forgotten the gracious good news that we've been forgiven. That's for some of us now, you know, and this is just a fresh reminder of it. I don't even know how to talk about it other than just to say, Spirit of God, would you fall on us afresh and help us to reconnect with how precious your grace and mercy is for us. Some of us are here, though, and it's all we could do to get here. I mean, like, we are here. Making it to a service feels like a huge accomplishment. We'd rather crawl through the door unnoticed. We don't want to come to church because we know what our week was like. And part of us kind of believes that there is a judge of the living and the dead, and we will come under his harsh gaze. You know, like most people don't want to come to church because they fear judgment. both from people at the church, but if they're honest, from God himself. And what Jesus is saying with this parable is his gaze is not wrathful. It's merciful. It's so much mercy and love. You know, like when you come to church in the morning, you come through the front doors and there are some friendly faces greeting you, yes? Imagine that the Lord himself was at those front doors. And he never locks them. The Lord himself, the King of Love, at the front door, and in his gaze is the gaze of the prodigal father welcoming us home. The one who is extravagant in his love for us. The one who would throw around us the finest robe, bringing him the choicest of meats or a bagel or good coffee. That's the King of Love. The gates never close. The city gates is mercy. And here's where Jesus starts, but this is not where Jesus ends. Yes? I mean, like if this were a sermon, if Jesus were giving a sermon, he'd talk about God and his forgiveness. And then you would say, now go and do likewise and have a good day. And we're done a little early. And you'd be like, man, that was a great church service, right? But he doesn't do that. He talks about this unmerciful servant. He talks about this servant who, instead of forgiving as he has been forgiven, the servant is lit aflame with the desire to get paid back himself. You know, we've talked about this before. This is what Rene Girard wisely calls mime desire. So he doesn't actually catch the forgiveness. He copies the desire of the king to get payback. I mean, he who has been forgiven like an astronomical sum goes after his fellow servant for like a fraction of that. It's not insignificant, but still. And this is what happens in the parable. And I'm really glad for it, aren't you? Are you glad for it? No, I'm glad for it because I'm glad that it's not like a tidy sermon at the end. It's like, okay, God forgives us and his mercy is wonderful and incredible. And so you must go and do likewise. No, he actually puts this unmerciful servant in to follow things up. And for this, I'm glad. I'm really glad because it's mercy. One of the ways that you read parables is you can kind of like, well, who is who in the parable, right? I mean, now you got to be careful with that a little bit. But I think in this particular parable, one of the things that we must consider is that unmerciful servant is us. I mean, what's harder, forgiveness or moving a mountain? I mean, look, think about this. When we are wronged, really wronged, not a mistake, like not, oh, it was just a mistake. Not an accident, but like a real legitimate malice toward us. Aren't we taught by our culture, maybe by well-meaning people around us, don't forgive until you're ready. I mean, and even we who have been forgiven so much, don't we say to our wronged brothers and sisters in our compassion, don't we say, hey, you are right to be angry. In fact, take your time. I mean, and I'm not saying that it's wrong to be angry, but I just want you to know, like when I was in Houston and I got knocked over because of that racialized, like, you know, like, hey, I associate you, you're Asian, I associate you with COVID. I'm going to tell you that forgiveness didn't even occur to me. And I was with a bunch of pastors, and not even the pastors came and said to me, hey, have you considered forgiving him? In fact, even if I say that, some of you are sitting here thinking, that's monstrous. God did that thing to you, and for me to just come right up to you and say, hey, you should forgive that person, or have you considered forgiving that person, to be a little bit more invitational about it, wouldn't you, in your heart of hearts, don't you kind of recoil at that, kind of like, ooh. See, everything in our culture validates anger. I mean, we live in a moment when anger is almost a virtue. Like, where if you're not, like, appropriately angry at something, there must be something wrong with you. How many of you experienced that? Look, we live in this culture of, I guess, like, maybe we would call it moral outrage. When did outrage become moral? I mean, yes, there's such a thing as righteous anger, but consider that Jesus himself was outraged maybe one time, maybe lots of times, but he showed remarkable restraint, which is actually, I think, the lesson that we take from his life. Perhaps you've also heard it said, the world is a forgiving place. Anybody ever heard of that before? Anybody ever hear like something about America? Like, America's a really forgiving. I'm like, I watch a lot of sports, and I oftentimes hear like, man, you did like steroids. So just go in front of people and say, I did it, I'm sorry, and the world will forgive you. You know, like, haven't you heard that before? Anybody? I've heard that. I just read recently, man, you should come out and say you're sorry because the world is a forgiving place. But here's the funny thing about all of that. It's predicated on the penitence of the person asking for forgiveness, isn't it? Like, we don't forgive people until they've groveled before us, right? Until we put them in a press conference and they sit there and they read some statement that their publicist helped them to write. I'm not cynical about that, by the way. I mean, I think it takes a lot of courage to do that, actually. But is that really forgiveness or is that just payback, but in a different kind? Right? So, like, a recent book that just came out from a professor from my alma mater, Martha Nussbaum. She wrote a book on anger and forgiveness, and she talks about this problem that anger has actually become like this virtue, you know, almost like this moral virtue, that we should be angry, that we should post on our Instagrams, you know, I'm so angry about this, or I'm so angry about that, and if we don't say something about that, man, you know, we are not properly representing justice, but we hardly ever talk about forgiveness. And Martha Nussbaum, who to my knowledge is not a Christian, even says, hey, anger has as its proper end, the only thing that it has as its proper end is payback. Or the pleasure of thinking about it, as Aristotle will tell us. It's pleasing to us to just fantasize about paying that person back. But think about your anger. Think about the proper end to it being payback. What does that create? Well, it creates this vicious cycle where all you want over time, over and over again, is payback over and over and over and over again. And that's actually not freedom. That's a prison. And look, one of the reasons why I didn't want to talk about this topic today is because this is like nuanced, right? Like if you have been traumatized by someone, many of us have been, by the way. Forgiveness doesn't obviate the need to find healing from that trauma. We should. And please also understand that forgiveness doesn't mean allowing someone to keep hurting us in the same way over and over again, right? Wisdom, and I think Jesus would teach us that forgiveness may also need to be accompanied by boundaries or leaving an abusive relationship. And when you think about all these nuances, it does feel almost impossibly glib and uncaring to say, you've got to forgive, doesn't it? I mean, haven't you ever been in a situation where some well-meaning person tells you, have you ever considered forgiving? And you think, man, I'm never talking to that person again. Anybody ever had that or thought that way? Just me? Don't raise your hands. But here's the thing. I mean, the one who tells us to forgive is Jesus himself, who has forgiven us. And I just would like to ask you to consider that maybe Jesus knows something about the nature of unforgiveness. Maybe Jesus knows that anger consumes us. Maybe Jesus knows that unforgiveness reduces us to dust and ash, ripping the flesh from our bones, as Frederick Buechner, who must have given some real cracking sermons in his day, he tells us this, of the suddenly seven deadly sins, anger is possibly the most fun. To lick your wounds, to smack your lips over grievances long past, to roll over your tongue the prospect of bitter confrontations still to come, to savor to the last toothsome morsel both the pain you are given and the pain you are giving back. In many ways, it is a feast fit for a king. The chief drawback is that what you are wolfing down is yourself. The skeleton at the feast is you. And so we've talked about the king demonstrating love to us. We've talked about the king actually exposing us and the difficulty of unforgiveness and forgiveness. And now, finally, we just want to look at the king who forgives us, who breaks the cycle. The king who shows us how to forgive, enables us to forgive. And remember, I told you there's this verse. It's a beautifully knit description of the three components of forgiveness. If you want to define forgiveness, well, here's your definition. Three things, as Tim Keller points out to us in this passage. Three things. First thing, took pity on him. The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, let him go. Three things. Took pity on him, canceled the debt, let him go. First thing, took pity on him. Better way to read the Greek verb, took pity, is his heart goes out. In other words, his heart, his compassion, it goes out. And more than that. Like, so what is the definition of empathy? Well, the definition of empathy is putting ourselves in someone else's shoes. Well, think about the Lord Jesus himself, who had so much empathy that he actually became one of us. In the kingdom of heaven, empathy is incarnation. The Lord of life actually gives his life for us. The Lord of life actually becomes the expiating sacrifice for all the things we need forgiveness for once and for all. He makes possible forgiveness for you and me because he has forgiven all, which leads us to cancels the debt. Astronomical sum completely wiped out. Nothing more owed. No repayment due. Vengeance is averted. Recognize that what Jesus is saying is Jesus is saying, if this were to happen 77 times, it wouldn't matter. In other words, 77,000 bags of gold do not stand in the way of forgiveness. And finally, he lets them go. I mean, has it ever occurred to you? And also, borrowing from the other parable, the prodigal son, has it ever occurred to you that there's not like, wait, just like tell me how you spent that money. It's a lot of money. I mean, like when I was a kid, there was this movie that was out about this guy who had to spend all this money in a certain period of time. And if he spent all this money, he would get all this other money. And he found spending all that money really hard to do. The king doesn't say, that's a lot of money. How did you actually spend it? Where is it? He doesn't ask for explanation. Prodigal, The father in the parable of the prodigal son doesn't ask for explanation either. He's like, okay, wait, before we go in and have our food, you just got to tell me, where did all that money go? You just got to tell me. He embraces him, lets him go to the feast without another word. The older son is a different matter entirely. The older son requires what the world requires. He requires retribution. So what does this letting go mean? Well, this letting go means this. I think this is what it means. In the kingdom, this is a little complicated, but let me just say this. In the kingdom, the ground or the reason for forgiveness or the way we can forgive is not the penitence or the explanations or the groveling or the way that a person comes to us and shows sincere contrition. It's not that. The ground of forgiveness is not how much or broken we are about it. The lesson from the unmerciful servant, the lesson from the parable of the prodigal son, is that the ground of forgiveness is the character of the king. The reason for forgiveness is found solely in the character of God, in the character of the king. The ground of forgiveness is his heart going out. So if I'm preaching a normal sermon, what I would say is I would say, okay, now, so we've given us this tidy little formula. These are the three things that you must do. The three things are his heart goes out, he cancels the debt and let him go. And so you should go do the same thing. So when you want to go forgive somebody, you should let your heart go out, which of course you should, right? Because identification is really, really important. We are all sinners in desperate need of grace. And when we can believe that, we can actually take a step toward forgiveness. Yes, 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 that's all true. We cancel the debt and we let them go. So if this were like, you know, a sermon that maybe you were used to hearing, you would be hearing something like, okay, so I need to go and do likewise. And then we're done, right? Easy. But I don't think that's what this passage is saying. I think this passage is saying that the possibility of forgiveness lies in his heart, not in ours. And so when we forgive, it's not our hearts go out in pity, even though that's something that we must do. It's his heart going out in us. Like, I mean, when it comes to forgiveness, oftentimes we're told, like, don't forgive until you're ready to forgive. I don't think that that's bad counsel, but I think that what that presumes is that presumes that the conditions of forgiveness, the ground of forgiveness must be in you and totally in you, in your capacity. But I think that what this parable is saying is that the promise of forgiveness is that when you can step out into forgiveness, the Spirit of God will help you in your weakness. As hard as it is for you to step out and let your heart go out, if you carry his heart in you, you can do it. The capacity to forgive is in his heart. And so it might be better to say that when we forgive, it's his heart going out to the other who has wronged us, his heart and ours. In fact, one of the best things that we can do when we're faced with the mammoth task of forgiveness is to ask God to see the person the way he does, to say, I want your heart for that person because I want your heart to go out. And I don't know if you've ever prayed that prayer before. Anybody ever prayed that prayer before? God loves to answer that prayer. He loves to answer that prayer. Yet have you ever considered that you might not need to be ready to forgive because he's already ready? And have you also ever considered, I mean, this is one other thing that I want to say. I'm running out of time here, but I want to say this really quickly. And then we have something that I want us to invite us to do. I think that one of the other reasons why we have such a hard time forgiving is because we have a hard time believing that we've been forgiven. And Buechner again tells us what Jesus apparently is saying is that the pride that keeps us forgiving is the same pride that keeps us from accepting forgiveness. And will God please help us to do something about it? And I'm here to say the Spirit will help you in your weakness. I'm here to tell you this morning that if you are fumbling and struggling with the capacity to forgive, knowing that forgiveness through forgiveness lies the door of freedom, God will help you. That's what I'm here to tell you this morning. The Spirit will help you in your weakness. Forgiveness is not this alien effort out of our own capacity. Forgiveness is a sign and wonder. It's a miracle. Like many of us know the story of Corrie ten Boom. Many of us know the story of Corrie ten Boom, the German woman whose family hid Jews during the Holocaust. Hiding place. Anybody read that in school growing up? Anybody? Ten Boom would like go and speak at all these other churches or places on her experience. And on one occasion, I don't know if you know this story or not. It's not in the book, I don't believe. A guard from the camp she was held in, this camp where she went with her sister, her family got found out. They were discovered hiding Jews, and so they were captured. They were put in concentration camps, and she was held in this camp, and her sister died in the camp. And one occasion, she's telling the story about everything that happened, and a guard comes up from the camp she was in and says, I was a guard at Ravensbrück. But since that time, he went on, I have become a Christian. I know that God has forgiven me for the cruel things I did there, but I would like to hear it from your lips as well. Will you forgive me? And he held his hands out. And Ten Boom says, and I stood there, I whose sins had every day to be forgiven and could not. Betsy had died in that place. Could he erase her slow, terrible death simply for the asking? It could not have been many seconds that he stood there, hand held out, but to me it seemed hours as I wrestled with the most difficult thing I'd ever had to do. For I had to do it, I knew it. The message that God forgives has a prior condition that we forgive those who have injured us. If you do not forgive men their trespasses, Jesus says, neither will your Father in heaven forgive your trespasses. And I stood there with the coldness clutching my heart. But forgiveness is not an emotion. I knew that too. Forgiveness is an act of the will, and the will can function regardless of the temperature of the heart. Why? Well, why? Because the Spirit helps us, yes? And this is exactly what happens. She says, Jesus, help me. I can lift my hand. I can do that much. You supply the feeling. And so woodenly, mechanically, I thrust my hand into the one stretched out to me. And as I did, an incredible thing took place. The current started in my shoulder. For those of you who are familiar with the vineyard, you know that this is the Spirit of God. Yes? The current started in my shoulder, raced on my arm, sprang into our joined hands. And then this healing warmth. Man, this is the Spirit of God. When we talk about praying for people for healing, this is what happens. Warmth, current, seemed to flood my whole being, bringing tears to my eyes. I forgive you, brother, I cried with all my heart. For a long moment, we grasped each other's hands, the former guard and the former prisoner. I'd never known God's love so intensely as I did then. And listen, I'm going long here, but I want to invite the band to come back up. Because in this moment, what I want to submit to you is the Spirit is here. And he's willing to help you in your need. And so I want to invite you to do something. I know I'm treading on very tricky, complicated ground. I know that by doing this, by asking you to do this, I might be saying to you that you don't need to get help for trauma or don't need to set boundaries. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, will you step out in the faith knowing that in the faith of the God who sends the Spirit, who will help us in our time of need, when we have such a hard time forgiving, he will help us to do it. And so I'm going to ask you, would you forgive today? There's a note card in your seat back in front of you. There's a pen. It's just like this one. Oh, I don't have it with me, which makes sense. Not good at the details. Not good at the details. But I guess what I'm asking is would you do that today? And would you come up in our wastebaskets up here? We're going to play for a little bit, play quietly. The band is going to play quietly for a little bit. And I want to invite you, in this moment, would you step out, reach out into the void, knowing that the Spirit of God can help you in your weakness? And would you maybe forgive this morning? And I even say this. I mean, if you're having a hard time forgiving yourself, receiving that forgiveness, you can even put your own name on there too. And this is how we'll end. So for the rest of you, if you want to do this, please just take a moment in the quiet. Just write one name, write one person, maybe write yourself, and we'll be done. You can drop that in the wastebasket, and you can be on your way. Bless you.